Afternoon, everyone. I'll quickly run through the week ahead. On Tuesday, I will be accompanying the Duke and Duchess of Sussex to visit Pillars. We will meet the public on a walkabout down around the viaduct, and later in the evening I will host a reception at Auckland Museum. On Thursday, the second reading of the child poverty legislation, which I have responsibility for as Minister for Child Poverty Reduction, will progress through the House, and I will be visiting Porirua for a housing development announcement. On Friday, the Labour Party conference starts and runs through Saturday and Sunday, and will be accompanied by the usual party conference activity, and I look forward to seeing some of you down there. Look, I'll preempt a few of the questions that might exist around the royal visit. I very much enjoyed the time that I had with their Royal Highnesses yesterday evening. The discussion covered a number of issues, but in general terms, given their recent time in the Pacific, covered issues around the Pacific, climate change, children's issues, and mental health. I also used the opportunity to share a few personal gifts for the Duchess of Sussex. I shared with her a personal gift of a set of earrings, Bauranga earrings featuring the crossed feathers, which some of you may be familiar with. I also gave a gift to His Royal Highness of Shapeshifter CD. For those familiar with Shapeshifter, I gave him a copy of The System as a Vampire because it includes the track titled Dutchies, which is the song, the music that the All Blacks enter onto the field with, including, of course, at Twickenham. I also gave him a piece of vinyl, their Stars album, which was released in 2016 and is a fine album. All right, happy to take any questions on these and other matters.
Why was Carol Shrewbrick not deported?
Yeah, look, this is a conversation that I've had with the Minister of Immigration. And it's fair to say that governments of both stripes will face these kinds of questions and these kinds of cases. They are rare in the order of 40-ish a year, but it's not unusual for ministers of both governments, past and present, to face these kinds of situations. The minister shared with me the careful consideration that he gave this case, and I can say from the information that he shared with me, it was clearly for him a very difficult decision. And whilst he hasn't been able to share all of the information that sat behind that, I think just glancing back at some of the past coverage of his entry into New Zealand, reading between the lines, you can probably ascertain why the minister made the decision that he made. But again, not an easy one for him, not an easy one for past ministers either.
Are there humanitarian concerns?
Again, whilst he hasn't gone into the details of the case, I think it's fair to say if you look back on some of the past decisions that have surrounded this individual, you can draw a fair conclusion as to why the minister might have made the decision he's made.
Is there intelligence that his life is in danger?
Sorry?
Is there intelligence that Shrewbrick's life is in danger?
Again, and while I don't want to get into the detail of this case, I think you can probably draw a fair conclusion on why the minister made this decision.
How do you balance that with the rights of New Zealand?
Yeah. Look, this is the difficult decisions that ministers of immigration and this government and past governments have to face. It's not an easy place to be in, and that's why I think the Minister of Immigration has said it was a very difficult decision for him, one that he gave a lot of consideration to, and one which he didn't take lightly.
Reading between the lines, his life was in danger.
There's information that I'm not in a position to share, but you might be able to infer from some of the past discussions on this case that this was a decision that could have had significant ramifications and the minister didn't take lightly.
At what chance is one chance? At what point is one last chance, one chance too many? Because this guy's been convicted, arrested for various drugs charges, blackmail, aggravated robbery, and again, one more last chance.
Yeah, and look, obviously the minister's now put that in writing, and the ramifications for this individual of breaching, I think, what the minister has set down are pretty significant. But again, this was not an easy decision, and not something that he's taken lightly.
Simon Bridges said that Ian Lee's Galloway should explain or resign.
Yeah, and look, as I say, this is the kind of decision making that has not just faced this minister, but has faced his past ministers as well. You know, a handful of these happen for every minister of immigration. They would be tough, I imagine, regardless of the political stripes that you might have. But ultimately, we need to allow those ministers to do their job. They are the ones that have all of the information in front of them, and these aren't easy decisions.
I don't think the public's got a right to know that. This man was sentenced to almost 6 years in jail for importing 5 kilograms of ecstasy.
Gary, I'm giving some pretty clear clues on what's gone on in this decision making.
No, I'm just asking you the public's right.
Yeah.
Doesn't the public have a right to know this man, when he's released, is going to become a permanent citizen?
And just to be clear on that the minister didn't grant him this is where it gets a little bit technical. The minister didn't grant him new status. He already had that status, but of course it was under the incorrect identity. So it wasn't new status, but he of course needed it to be in the correct name. Again, he entered into New Zealand under a different identity because of, as you'll see from previous cases, the circumstances in which he arrived in New Zealand.
One of the conditions is that he obtain a new Czech passport within 5 months. Realistically, what do you think his chances are of achieving that?
Look, that's not something I have details on. That would be a question for the minister or officials.
Why does the important guest consultation period make it so short?
And obviously this is now a process we're going through in order to allow the block offer for 2018 to go ahead. That's something obviously that we want to make sure that we progress this calendar year. And so that's why we're going through this process now. The block offer is not a significant policy change. And that's essentially what this legislation is allowing us to put out that block off for 2018.
But do you seriously think there'll be any interest in block off 2018 given that?
Oh, thank you. It's very disconcerting.
Do you think there'll be any actual interest in it given the sort of situation around it? Like who would put their hand up?
Again, I think it needs to be put in the wider context. Of course, last block offer, I think, had one successful offer. And so I don't think it would be fair just simply to make that assumption based on the wider decision here, because there actually has been a change in the uptake in the last few years. But again, we are giving certainty to those who currently hold permits and those who would be seeking an onshore block offer that we will honour the commitments around those permits. And actually what we're looking at here is giving a greater certainty rather than year on year around those onshore offers than they otherwise would have.
Yeah, but the point is that rushing through a piece of legislation for the sake of a block offer that is potentially not going to be that useful anyway?
What gives you this, on what basis are you making the assumption it wouldn't be that useful?
Uncertainty, I guess.
And that's the point I'm making. We've given absolute certainty. And for those who currently hold permits, I've given that personal commitment to those who hold permits, and I've done this directly to those in the industry, that those who currently hold permits will have those permits on.
But will there be a chance for the public then to have a say on the change to a halt to most new permits, if not block offers?
Again, for the block offer, obviously that's an existing power that's already existed for governments past and present. Those block offers happen at the discretion of the minister. This is a requirement that we had to go through in order to make sure that that we met the legislative time, met the timetable for Block Open 2018.
Sure, but part of this is the decision not to give any future permits, to hold most future permits. When will the public have a chance to actually give
you feedback about that policy change? Hey, look, some are using this opportunity, but ultimately the decision as to whether these block offers or not is always at the discretion of the Minister of Energy.
What about the decision to hold future permits?
I think at the moment that people said that issues around climate change and the use of fossil fuels, if that mattered to them, then these kind of decisions matter to them.
What were the Royals' reaction to the gifts?
Describe them as really genuine appreciation. Yeah.
Did you give them to them personally, or does it get passed on?
Oh, no, I gave it to them personally.
Prime Minister, in a TV interview, Calvin Davis has said that he is not precious about his position as a deputy leader. Do you think he's committed enough?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think probably what you're hearing from Calvin Davis is the fact that he is a politician that doesn't have any ego. That he's in politics for all of the right reasons. And that makes him incredibly good at what he does. He represents people well, and he supports me as deputy leader really well as well. And so I'm incredibly grateful for the role he plays.
Did he do a good job when he filled in for you in the House?
He's always done a good job. His role as deputy is a very specific job. From time to time, it means he jumps into the role of filling in for me while I'm away. But his primary role is an ongoing one. It is that he sits within our caucus, playing a real support role, particularly some of the pastoral care for our team members, and he does that job incredibly well.
What about in the House, though?
Yeah, and that is one tiny part of the job. And again, I think it's a part of the job that I thrust upon whoever's available at the time that I'm away and is available in the House. It's never an easy job, but he's always done that job really robustly for me too.
So you wouldn't consider replacing him with anybody?
No.
So he'll definitely be the deputy going into the
2020. Yes. Are you able to give a bit more detail around the nature of the discussions you had with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex on mental health?
Yeah. And look, whilst of course there's tradition always is to keep these to convey the discussions in a fairly high level way, what I can share is the fact that I came away being even more certain that they are very, very genuine in their passion for this area. And are very focused on it. I shared a little bit from New Zealand's perspective around some of the challenges that we have, some of the statistics that we have, and some of the groups that we particularly need to focus on within New Zealand, particularly our young people and males.
You said that they gave you a gift. They gave you a gift. You gave them a gift.
Yes.
Did they give you a gift?
Yes. Yes, I was given a, it was a community project that Her Highness worked on in the wake of with the Greenfield community, a book of recipes, and which I think was done sometime after that tragedy. So yeah, it was really a really lovely gift.
Obviously not time to cook any of them yet, but
it's only been a space of 24 hours, but I appreciate that you think I'm a superwoman. It's
great. You had a chance to flip through and have a look at any of the recipes and earmark them for a little bit later, things you might want to try.
Not quite yet. I am worried about the whether or not I can get them down to a milder level of spice.
In your discussions with the Duke and Duchess about mental health, did you get the sense that they were aware about the mental health issues that have been dominating New Zealand politics recently?
I definitely got a sense that they were aware of the issues that face New Zealand as a nation, but actually also an appreciation that this is a global challenge, and that we are not alone in our region in facing these challenges, and that particularly we do and should be focusing on young people in an area where obviously they both have a real genuine interest.
Often before these trips, royals will get a bit of a heads up about what's been going on in a country's politics before they arrive. Do you think they knew about the issues that have been discussed around mental health?
I couldn't say. We had a very general discussion around issues that actually I wouldn't say have politics in them, but just challenges that we face as a nation.
Just going back to the deportation decision for a moment, I just wanted, for clarity, the UN Refugee Convention has provisions which say the state can't refoul people back to a situation of torture or cruel and degrading treatment.
Can't recall, did you say?
Refoul is the word. Yeah. It's a refoulement provision.
Yeah.
Were those considerations weighed in the ministry?
That would need to be a specific question for the minister. Unfortunately, I couldn't say whether or not those conventions were played a direct role in his decision. But it's fair to say with issues around extradition, certainly deportation, I imagine it would be factored.
Because you'll be aware that in the previous government, refugees that did face the threat of violence on being deported were told that they could just shift to another city and that would therefore mitigate the threat to them. Mm. It would seem, again, when people are trying to work out the context, they would be concerned why, or either they would welcome the fact that a more compassionate approach is being taken by the current government. Should we be fair in regarding that as being a possible inference?
Yeah, well, look, I think what you've highlighted, though, is that there are a range of factors that are weighed up by any minister. And whilst I can't comment on whether those specifically some of those obligations played a role, it is fair to say that those are the kinds of things that you would have an expectation a minister would take into account. More generally, also, it's worth considering that my understanding of the way the process works is, had this a different decision been made by the minister, there would still have been an ability to go through a tribunal process to raise some of those, potentially some of those issues as well.
Prime Minister, do you find anything patronising about a British royal coming over to inspect our military and see if the troops are up to snuff?
No, because actually I have inspected other guards as well. I mean, it's often part of a welcoming ceremony. I've certainly, off the top of my head, I've been through that process in Samoa. I've been through that process in Germany, and so that's often part of that official welcome.
When do you think New Zealand will be a mature enough nation to forge its own destiny?
I wouldn't take that as being a sign of that. I definitely don't think that it was, for instance, Germany bowing down to the superiority of New Zealand and having me inspect their military. I think it's just a part of the form, often part of those formal welcomes.
In your discussions, did you talk about New Zealand's future and the Maiki republicanism?
No. And look, I've been asked about this a few times before. I do not pick up from the New Zealand public that this is high on their agenda, that this is an issue that they see of such importance that we need to be debating it in the current environment for New Zealand. And I take my cue from them.
Are you concerned with the plight of the Uyghur Muslims in China?
Yes, whilst I haven't had a recent briefing, obviously, we are mindful in all our discussions around and bilaterals and so on around humanitarian issues, but again, I haven't had one for some time.
Is it something you'd raise with the Chinese representation when you meet them over here or on a future visit?
Yeah, generally speaking, of course, we take the opportunity to raise issues of concern. I think a bit preemptive to say exactly what I would discuss hypothetically, given I haven't sat down and ordered some of those issues because I don't have one on the agenda currently.
When human rights issues are raised, do you raise them generally or do you detail specific concerns?
Oh, look, it actually depends on the circumstance. I have had situations where we've raised very specific information. Some will be familiar with, for instance, where there might be issues around the use of the death penalty that might relate to a specific individual, then we do sometimes go into specifics, but sometimes we equally will keep a high level comment.
What case was that you were referring to?
I need to check whether or not we put in the public domain the individual's name, but we have done that in the past.
Was the process that with the compensation?
Yeah, I checked in with the Minister's Office. Look, I understand that they're just working through some technical details to make sure that in providing compensation that we wouldn't have that counted, for instance, as income, and then that would in effect have caused other elements of benefits in particular to be deducted or reduced. So there's just some technical work that's been done to make sure that we go through the compensation process in a way that's fair and as we would intend.
Is it going as quickly as kind of still the procurement would expect?
Oh, look, it's very rare that things move at a pace that we would hope, but you sometimes cannot always make provision for some of the things that crop up along the way when we look to roll these things out.
Did we discuss digital
energy? Yeah, actually, thank you for asking. I actually had a very detailed conversation around just the future use of digital technology, its use in elections, the impact it's had on the way that the Estonian people view issues of privacy. It's fair to say that they have been in a digital focus space for the delivery of government services for a lot longer. They have probably changed mindsets, are not having the same ethical debates, they haven't had the same privacy breaches, and so they're in probably a bit of a different space to us, but it was a really interesting conversation.
Can we model some of that?
Yeah, and I think that probably, obviously, the network that they are a part of, that we are a part of as well, enables those learnings. But some, it is going to be, they are a population of a quarter the size of ours, and so some things are going to be a little bit different. And, of course, the way that their services are currently, the way their government agencies have, designed their digital services means they've probably got a bit of a head start on us as well. But there's always things to learn.
So what extent is that public perception versus actual sort of capability to do that?
I think for them it's probably both. It sounded to me from the brief, conversation we had that their capability is in a very different place. But equally, again, as I say, they haven't had the same kind of privacy breaches, and they have a pretty solid legal framework for those who misuse access to information, which probably means their social mandate might be a bit different to ours. But I'm, again, basing that just on conversation.
No.
My meeting was quite late in the evening. Thanks, Jason. Very important to schedule these things.
The first people to be in the ballot house from here like a couple of people on the fast track to high incomes, highest middle class people. Why is the government confident that the balloting system itself won't mean that those kinds of people self-select into balloting, the people who have quotas might have expected to receive some opportunity to get a house or self-select out?
You make a lot of assumptions based on probably the pithy descriptions you've seen of individuals. Well, of course, we've got income thresholds in place. And what I would say from the families that I canvassed there, there was a range of different careers in the mix there. People who already had families, people who were hoping to start families, from a range of different quarters of Auckland. The one thing that they had in common, though, was many of them commented that they had not been eligible for any other form of support, but they also hadn't been able to get on the property ladder. And that's what KiwiBuild is about. We have to make sure that we're catering for everyone. And this in and of itself isn't going to be the thing that helps those who are on our lower incomes from getting into the housing market. For that, we're looking at the possibility of shared equity schemes. And we also have a program around, of course, public and state housing. But I equally don't want to allow there to be a group of people who are, earning wages that would put them in what we would, broadly call middle income earners, who equally just can't get onto the property ladder.
What's the type of
issue? I'd have to ask the minister, but it's something obviously that he's very mindful of, is a lever to assist those who just aren't able to make some of the deposit thresholds that are set for access to KiwiBuild.
What was Cabinet talking about today?
A range of issues, of which we'll be making some announcements around some of them in the very near future.
All right, everyone. Lime scooters.
Lime, no, we're not. Lime scooters.